Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, folks. Jeff Hauser joins us. He's the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Jeff, we hear these stories all the time of folks working in corporate America coming back to serve in the executive branch of government or the federal government and then spending a little time there and then going back to corporate America and then coming back to government. And we see this over and over and over again. Obviously, there's it comes replete with ethical problems, with conflicts and alike. Why is this so lucrative?
Well, the government has many important roles to play in society, and many of them include protecting people from the least well-behaved corporations. These protections are fine for well-behaved corporations, but you have corporations that are looking to make money in ways that violates the law. And so corporations want compliant regulators. They want to essentially regulate their regulators. And one way you can do that is to hire people who used to work in government, who are well known to people within the government. And those people can give you understanding of how the government works. They can use their personal relationships on your behalf. And they can loosen the rules. They can let things slide on your behalf. So, you know, they're fixers. So if you leave government and go to a corporation that has bad intent, the corporation can put you to work and get special treatment. And that is how the rule of law gets eroded case by case. And that could be everything from the financial sector, banks do this all the time, to big tech platforms, to pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, and in the area of the military, which absolutely drives me crazy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, some of these defense contracts and projects with foreign nations that takes years to cultivate, they get cultivated, and then the general who was in charge of that working for the military retires and then goes to work for that country as a consultant who could possibly be an ally. Some are fringe allies. And then we're advising them as to how we do business in order to leverage as much money as they can out of the U.S. government. And we do that. It's such a seamless thing. It just drives me crazy as to how we can set these schemes up to benefit us. And these folks are being paid millions of dollars.
Seamless is definitely the right word, and that's what makes it so bad. You could always imagine one bad apple here or there, but in the defense space, it's become systematized. It's part of the structure. It is assumed that after you leave the military at a high enough rank that you will go to either a military industrial contractor in the U.S. or you will advise foreign countries, or sometimes you'll do both, and you will influence U.S. National security policy. You will help, our military industrial contracting complex is a complete failure. I mean, right now, the United States cannot supply weapons to Ukraine in sufficient quantities, and we're the world's leading superpower militarily, but we can't produce 155 millimeter shells. Why is that? Because the military-industrial complex in this country has focused on heavily profitable, high-tech programs that don't necessarily work, And why do they get away with producing very profitable but unsuccessful military products? It's because they have this seamless relationship with the top end of military contracting, where many of the people who are involved in military contracting for the military expect to eventually revolve out to the contractors. And there's just so much buddy-buddy, everyone playing ball, and that's with billions and billions of dollars of American taxpayer money. It's horrifying.
This has been referred to as the swamp. It hadn't been drained. What is the, you know, these programs that are developed that we that you talk about, I think the listening audience would probably be surprised, but then again, maybe not, of the fail rate of these programs when you're talking about these technological weapons that are out there and then millions upon millions of dollars that are being spent that end up nowhere. They deliver nothing.
Yes, cost overruns, even programs that some go are eventually operational, like the F-35 fighter jet is, you know, at several multiples of its original cost. The Defense Department is, there have been efforts repeatedly to audit the Defense Department and figure out just what is being spent, what is owed. There have been several serious efforts, and no one's actually been able to fully audit the Defense Department. We don't even really have great operational numbers on what the resources are and how much it's been costing the government. They can't keep track of what they are spending. So we're in a situation in which you can't, it's hard to expect the public to really scrutinize the Defense Department when even the auditors who are given access to the ostensible books can't make heads or tails of what is going on in the expenditures of the Defense Department. It really needs to be rebuilt, and we need to create a sense of accountability and a sense of pride in working for the military, that your job is to spend your career there. You're not going to revolve out, and you're going to be judged on how have you helped make the country safer, and have you also saved the taxpayer money. I mean, that's what we need to instill. We need serious scrutiny to make that happen. Harry Truman became president in the 1940s. He became by becoming FDR's vice president in 1944. The reason he became famous enough to become vice president for FDR was that he led a Senate committee providing oversight of military acquisitions during World War II to rein in profiteering. Part of why America was so isolationist during the Hitler's rise in the 1930s was that people had been horrified by the profiteering that had occurred in World War I. It was clear that a lot of companies made a lot of very unjustifiable profits. Truman helped stop that from occurring at the same level during World War II, which is part of why both the American response to World War II was ultimately successful, but also how it maintained popular support, because it's really hard to justify a country going to war, people dying, and you know, people really pitching and making economic sacrifices if all it is doing is making some defense industry fat cats rich. We need to kind of bring back that kind of oversight and skepticism so that people can have faith in their country and their government again.
There is a simple fix, though, right? A period of time after government service where you're prohibited from doing all of that. I mean, we have the same issue with members of Congress who, during the past elections, it's been revealed that they're working for consulting firms actually representing Russian oligarchs and looking out for their best interests, not so much the interests of the United States any longer, only because of their ability to peddle their relationships.
Absolutely, yes. And you need a serious cooling off period. For some jobs, there's 1 year. For some, there are two. But we got to be looking at and there are workarounds, unfortunately, which make even the 1 to 2 year cooling off periods ineffective. But we need something more on the order of like 5 to 7 years between working for the government and then going into a government influencing job in the private sector. No one is saying you have to stay in the government for all time. There are all sorts of jobs in the economy. Not every job that is not the government needs to be in politics. So if somebody leaves the military, they have a lot of good, great skills, and they can put them to use in the private sector in all sorts of ways. They don't have to be in helping Saudi Arabia buy American weapons or training the Saudi military to, you know, commit what seems to be genocide in Yemen or anything like that, or advising Russian oligarchs or any of the number of really embarrassing things that former high-level American officials have been doing. So, yeah, we need a serious cooling-off period. It's not to say no one can make money. It's not to say anyone has to spend their entire career in the government, but it is saying that you shouldn't be able to sell your insight into the American government to the highest bidder when you leave government. That is essentially government property. Your expertise in how the government runs, it was developed in a system run by our democracy and funded by the taxpayers, and it's not yours to put out on the market for the highest bidder.
And this is one of those cases where the offenders are bipartisan, right?
Oh, for sure. And that's why I was talking about like the need to make this not seamless and change culture and change expectations. It has become so ritualized, so normalized, that all sorts of people, regardless of their point of view on any number of political issues, thinks it's uncontroversial to the phrase is like make a little bit of money after government. And that can become being a formal lobbyist, that can be doing a job which is technically not a lobbyist, but most ordinary people would look at what your responsibilities are and say that's a lobbyist. It can be advising foreign countries. It's become normal, so people don't even think they're doing something problematic.
And the use of this term that we're going to put up a Chinese wall, that may be the most exaggerated and ridiculous term I've ever heard of in my life, that we can create a wall around an individual within a very complicated organization and think that it's actually going to work. Your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, So if a law firm has a senior partner who's not supposed to, you know, is supposed to be recused from something, they have insider information, like the notion that you're going to be able to prevent them from chatting at a party or over a discrete technological app that, deletes messages.
Like WhatsApp?
Yes. I mean, exotic things like Snapchat. I mean, yes, these technologies exist. And the notion that if we monitor everyone's Outlook to figure out if they are violating a firewall. These are fake solutions that lawyers like to propose because drafting up the solution can, create a lot of billable hours, and it's a Band-Aid on a gaping hole.
So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was this article that I saw in the AP. Actually, it's a former writer for our local newspaper here in New Orleans, Jim Mustian, who participated. And it caught my attention, and I read the article. And I served 40 years in law enforcement, 10 as an elected sheriff. And I've always been very proactive in drug enforcement. And I was really taken aback by this approach of the DEA, and I've heard a number of stories of this revolving door, going to work Big Pharma on diversion and dealing with the diversion unit within the DEA, then coming back to DEA, serving some years, going back. This back and forth is absolutely ridiculous. And the sole purpose of DEA, for the most part, is drug eradication and their diversion program, making sure that drugs are not overprescribed in certain areas. And again, this guy ends up being the number two after consulting with Purdue Pharma. It's like, what? How does this work? And the story breaks and all of a sudden he disappears, right?
So it was great journalism by the Associated Press, and it's great when we have our journalistic outlets doing exactly what they need to do. And this guy, Louis Million, he had also worked for a Louisiana-based company, Morrison Dixon, which was a wholesale drug distributor. And if you're a Morrison Dixon or a Purdue Pharma, you know there is, you know, at that point in time between 2017 and 2021, there's growing skepticism and awareness of the opioid pandemic. Your life is going to get a lot more difficult, and you want to understand what you can get away with, and you also want to put your best face forward to government regulators. And if you bring in somebody who has spent 20 years at the DEA, who's a senior official, who may have like been responsible for promotions to the people who are still there, maybe a well-liked former boss, a mentor figure, if your face to that government regulator is one of theirs, you're just going to be treated a little bit better. It's not the same as just hiring a random person who is intellectually up to snuff and familiar with the subject matter. Relationships matter. We're a social species, and corporations are smart enough to know that people who have the best and most relevant relationships are worth a premium, and the premium comes about because they can make the government response different than it would be if it were just a neutral third party. And that's not how we want government to work. Like, we want government to treat everyone the same, and we don't want it to be the case that the big companies that can hire in a savvy, expensive way former public servants get better treatment than the writers of the laws had ever anticipated.
I love the way that you put it in the article that quoted you. Too much collegiality is a problem.
processes that need is supposed to be adversarial. I mean, you wouldn't like say, well, in order to understand the mafia, the media, the law enforcement needs to hire veterans of the mafia. Like, we don't want collegiality beyond a certain point undermines the ability of these government agencies to serve as the cops on the beat. I mean, you see this with bankers wanting to have bank regulators who, you know, used to work with them and will work with them again in the near future. You see it in pharma, as we discussed. You see it in the Defense Department. Like, we want skepticism, and it's undermined by collegiality.
In this particular case, it's even worse, though, because the position that this guy was hired for was actually created, it seems as though, to circumvent what the real position is that would have to go to Congress or before the Senate for approval, right? And it seems as though agencies of the executive department now are making a practice of creating these workaround positions that have all the duties of the position that needs Senate confirmation, but they don't want to go through that process because all of this would have been revealed, more likely than not.
For sure. This is a very much a two-sided coin, and it's funny, my previous call was a work call related to this topic on the other direction. So the big picture that your listeners need to understand is the U.S. government has a lot of positions that are subject to Senate confirmation. And that's obviously important. That's part of the checks and balances. The president makes a nomination. The Senate is supposed to offer a vote up or down. There have been some innovations that have occurred in the last 20 years, and I use innovation in the most derisive manner possible, whereby the confirmation process has entirely broken down. So
it's completely bastardized. They've bastardized it for political,
right?
You know,
and Tommy Tuberville right now is developing like a bipartisan enemy list because he is blocking promotions within the entire military. So there are a few hundred promotions that are backed up because he is like a one-man blockade. And so on the one hand, the Senate is not in a timely manner voting up or down on nominees. So that means that we did not have an ambassador to the country of Niger when Niger had a coup. Like, that's the kind of thing you would want your ambassador to be on top of, and we didn't have one. And it's undermining military readiness. So on the one hand, you understand why the executive branch is like, we need workarounds. On the other hand, you want to have checks and balances. So when you're doing these workarounds, where you're putting in people in place who act with the powers of an office but are not Senate confirmed, sometimes the unchecked executive messes up, and that is obviously the case here. Senate confirmation can play an important role. I would argue that there are probably too many jobs subject to Senate confirmation. It's actually over 4,000 jobs.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That is not how other countries view it. I mean, there are definitely hundreds of jobs, maybe even like a little over 1,000, but 4,000 makes it a lot easier to just kind of gum up the works. So we need this process fixed. We need to return Senate confirmation to the type of system whereby the president gets his or her prerogative most of the time, but when they screw up and suggest that a Purdue Pharma executive should be involved in drug enforcement, something that doesn't meet the laugh test, there is a response. So it's overall a big problem to how well the government does or doesn't work.
There's an easy solution to this. We have a full-time Congress. Once the person's nominated, you have 6 months, 8 months, pick an arbitrary amount of time to get through the confirmation, or they're confirmed. And if they don't schedule the hearing, they're automatically confirmed. And we stop this game playing both ways, because all it's done is just erode public confidence in government, you know, with playing this game. Our system is, to the victor goes the spoils, right? I mean, both ways. And, you know, it just... You get to name the people that you get to name, and in some cases it's a timing issue, in others it's not. But we shouldn't be playing this musical chairs game as every new administration comes in, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and it's a terrible situation if you're a well-intentioned person who is nominated, because you don't know if you're going to get a vote, and so you're trying to make sure you don't have anything that has a conflict of interest. You don't want to take on like a 6-month project if in theory you're supposed to be confirmed next month. But then if you're not, you don't get a vote up or down from the Senate for the next 18 months, your life has been on hold. And that's a hard thing to ask of anyone. And so you're making government service less attractive. So the system is definitely not benefiting anyone, even as it is giving some figures in the Senate, like Rand Paul, who's holding up the ambassadors, and Tommy Tuberville, who's holding up military promotions, it gives them a chance to posture.
Yeah. I guess you ask sometimes, why are people making themselves available for this three-ring circus? Because I ask that question all the time. It's like,
Yeah.
And you hate for us to get to that point, right, as it relates to government service, because it's important. Jeff Hauser,
it is important.
Thank you so much for your time and your insight. Truly appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thank you so much. Take care.
It's Jeff Hauser, Executive Director of the Revolving Door Project. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.